Welcome to All Sides with Anna Staver. For decades, parents have raised their children on this story. Go to college, get a degree, and earn your chance to live out the American dream. The road to financial success and stability wound through four-year institutions, not technical schools, not apprenticeships. But as the cost of college continues to rise and starting salaries continue to fall, interest in blue-collar careers has started to boom. Welders, electricians, and other trade careers are replacing the college degree as that path to the American dream, especially as artificial intelligence begins to reshape the white-collar job world. We're talking about the blue-collar job boom this hour, and we begin with Juliana Kaplan, senior labor and inequality reporter for Business Insider. Juliana, welcome to All Sides.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
I want to start by defining the blue-collar job boom. How do we know one is even happening?
Yeah, so we're seeing, obviously, lots of labor shortages, people needing blue-collar workers. At the same time, there is this real interest in blue-collar work. And at the same time, wages are going up a lot. So, you know, we have the data in terms of wages, in terms of jobs being added in the economy, especially as we see a shift away from roles that are traditionally white collar. That's your information sector, things like digital media, shedding jobs. At the same time, we're seeing things like construction and government jobs really booming. So we see that data as well. And then anecdotally too, we see a lot less interest in going to college, people wondering whether it's worth their time. And there's the whole TikTok side of it. Blue collar workers have found a really big audience on TikTok. People want to date them. They want to know how to become a blue collar worker. They're seeing how much UPS drivers are making. So all around, it's a really interesting dynamic.
And they've also got all different color categorizations. I've heard of green collar, pink collar. How are we defining blue collar? Is it generally just work that doesn't require a four-year degree?
Not necessarily. So the sort of official BLS definition is basically jobs that handle or move material goods. So moving things around, building things, putting them together. I think colloquially, as blue collar work has changed with the evolution of technology and our economy, it's basically not an email job. It's not a job that doesn't require. You don't have to sit in front of a screen all day to do it like I am doing right now.
Yeah, I know the feeling. So it could include everything from hairdressers and nail technicians to welders and assembly line workers.
Yeah, and you know, in my piece, I even wrote about somebody who started at Walmart as a cashier and then ended up becoming a manager. And that's a role where they now have a four-year degree, they have benefits, they have a six-figure salary, but we could still think of that as kind of under the umbrella of that type of work.
One of the things I mentioned in the beginning is that the cost of college is rising and the starting salary for college graduates is falling. Do you think that's a reason we're starting to see this shift, especially amongst younger millennials and the Gen Z generation, towards blue-collar work?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think that a lot of people took a look and were thinking about, is this something that's worth it to me? And in a lot of cases, they're making the calculation that it's not. You think about the Gen Zers, you know, I've definitely spoken with people who started going to college and then the pandemic hit and then they were doing online classes. They were seeing what looked like a cratering job market and they're like, I would rather not. Student loan debt is obviously a huge thing, especially as people keep seeing their options for forgiveness seemingly squashed. So I think it's something that people are reconsidering more broadly. And that's definitely leading to a lot of interest in blue collar work and also in the white collar side too. I think a lot of people are thinking about, one of my colleagues just had a great article on this, what is a steady job, like a government job versus going into tech, the kind of jobs that certain colleges would traditionally lead you to.
Yeah, since April of 2020, the construction, manufacturing, and transportation industries have added 4.5 million jobs. And that's coming at a time when the tech sector is contracting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you think that these blue-collar jobs, in some strange way, are starting to be seen as more stable, more reliable than the traditional STEM jobs we were all encouraged to go to.
Yeah, 100%. I've been really interested in what people call ZIRP, which is the zero interest rate phenomena. It's also very fun to say, where we saw this a lot during the pandemic, where it was basically free for companies to borrow money and staff up. And you saw these huge salaries. You see the great resignation. Everybody is fighting to get these bigger and bigger paychecks. Obviously, that's coming, back to earth now. We're seeing benefits stripped away, remote work being stripped away. And at the same time, there was also this real mindset shift, I think, during the pandemic as well, whereas jobs that are blue collar, that have traditionally been looked down upon, all of a sudden they were deemed as essential. And I think people started rethinking those jobs a lot more because they saw, first of all, those are jobs that are needed and are always there, and also jobs that merit respect. I think there was a lot of outpouring of support for higher pay for them and their role in society. And it was really interesting. I was talking to a UPS worker for this article, and UPS, I think, famously just got a very great contract. They have really good pay, they have really great benefits. And he was saying, well, I've been doing this for like 20, 15 years, and every time we've had a downturn, people still get packages. You might have a recession and AI steals your job, but you still need to order cat food, right? So I think that that's something that's becoming very clear to people too. The jobs that were supposed to be this big tech boom are sort of more ephemeral, but you can't really like AI welding something together.
At least not yet.
Not yet.
Despite the renewed interest in blue-collar careers, there remains a shortage of workers. A shortage that keeps increasing as baby boomers retire. According to a study from the Manufacturing Institute and Deloitte, nearly 2 million manufacturing jobs could go unfilled if the quote talent conundrum isn't solved. So, as much as there's interest, it doesn't seem to be enough to meet the current needs.
Yeah, and that's going to be, I think, a real changing tide to, something that a lot of the workers I spoke to mentioned is that there's still a lot of different stigmas around the work itself. People, the tides may be shifting, but, it's not a full transition yet. And I think another big aspect of this too is how to get women in the trades, and women in sectors as well. Pretty much everybody I spoke to said that, well, more women are entering the field, and there has been a bit of shifting of attitudes around it. There is still a lot of old school mindsets that this isn't necessarily a space for younger women. And if you're looking at who is working right now, it is prime age working women. So I think that that's still one big disconnect that a lot of, these workers are really trying to bridge. And you see that on social media, on TikTok. There's a lot of blue collar women who are posting about their roles and trying to encourage women to get into the trades, but still a bit of an uphill battle because of a lot of traditional, misogyny and ideas around gender roles that sort of exist both at large and in industries themselves.
It sounds similar to the challenge of women breaking into the tech sector.
But there's also, I think, a lot of very interesting dynamics around. I was speaking to one plumber who's saying, oh, someone I work with or no, doesn't say this woman can't carry things around because she's a small woman, which is an interesting dynamic. But he was saying he had a smaller female apprentice who's able to get to pipes that other workers can't get to. So it's thinking a lot about different ways that people can navigate this career, that there is a space for them, but it hasn't always traditionally been held.
One of the things I actually found fascinating about plumbers as I was preparing for this hour is that studies say we'll need 500,000 more of them in the coming decades. So there's definitely a need out there. Last year, The New Yorker warned about, quote, the great electrician shortage. It's fascinating to me because these are all things that we just need to function, and we don't think about it, right? You don't think about your electricity until it stops functioning. You don't think about your toilet until it stops working. But once it stops working, you absolutely 100% want the plumber there as quickly as possible.
Yes, we definitely need plumbers. Thank you to all plumbers. One plumber I spoke to actually said that, especially with worker shortages, it used to be he would show up at the start of his career and people would be like, okay, the plumber is here. Like, big sweaty guy, whatever. Now when he shows up to jobs, everybody's like, thank you so much. We're so glad that you're here. But yeah, I think also a lot of the shortages and ideas around this work come back to something that has been a part of blue collar work that is coming back as well, which is that if you're doing work that's very physically exhausting, which is not necessarily the case for tech workers or we digital media workers, you need benefits and a pension that match that, right? Like if you're going to be doing a lot of physically strenuous work, there's just a certain point where your body can't necessarily do that in the same way anymore. And so the idea of a blue collar career is okay, when it's, time to hang up your hat, you have those benefits and that pension to say, all right, you've done your time and now you can't anymore, so you're taken care of. So I think that's also been something that people are thinking a lot about when it comes to the longevity of these careers, and something that we're seeing renewed interest in to get people back into them.
Do you think that could lead to a resurgence in union interest? Because traditionally, that's how blue-collar workers have negotiated retirement ages, pensions, health benefits, workmen's comp.
Oh, yeah, I think definitely. I mean, again, just going back to the UPS contract, that was really aggressive bargaining, that got them a really strong contract that also got rid of some of the concessions that the union had had to make in prior bargaining during times when there wasn't as much union strength or at least union support. And I think this is also dovetailing a lot with something that we see among younger workers, which is they have this record high support for unions. And blue collar trades are traditionally the place where there are still strong, bustling unions. A lot of, one worker I spoke to who is, I think, like older Gen Z, younger millennial, went from doing the office job that she was supposed to get after getting a 4-year degree to working for the MBTA in Boston. Shout out the MBTA, I'm from Boston. And now she's in a union with all of these coworkers who are different ages. She has all these great benefits. And to her, that was a huge appeal of making that switch.
And one of the things that is important for anybody making this switch, and I don't want to underestimate it, is what society thinks or how we view this kind of work. And what I find fascinating is something we talked about or touched on briefly earlier is the role of social media. Because arguably, if you're under 30, you're consuming a lot of your news through your social media, particularly TikTok and Instagram and other places. And I find it fascinating the rise of blue collar TikTok in particular.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. And I think if we think about like sort of the early ages of Instagram, which is obviously a pretty big prototype for where we are now with TikTok, a lot of it was people showing you lives that you never have access to, or these beautiful aesthetics or travel. And not to say those things aren't still popular, but I think that especially as there's been a renewed increase in thinking about income inequality. And obviously, TikTok took off really during the pandemic when a lot of people were stuck at home and there was a very brazen have and have nots. We got to see a lot of the other side of it. So, if you think of Instagram as showing, the beautiful tableau or the beautiful house, TikTok, and especially because it's a video format, prioritizes like the movement, the action, the people who are building that or making that possible. And I think there's just a huge interest in that. And also, traditionally, like blue collar work, because it's not taking place online, like you don't have like the tech workers who are constantly, or again, digital media workers who are constantly on Twitter or Instagram or whatever posting about their work. You don't really like post a link to a plumbing job that you did. So I think that this is also a way to illustrate the kind of work that they're doing, that hasn't really had that widespread venue before.
Yeah, nobody wants to watch me click at my computer all afternoon. It's not
Oh
really
my
a
God.
dynamic video.
No, it would be really sad. I'll just be hunched over it.
That was Juliana Kaplan, Senior Labor and Inequality Reporter for Business Insider. Thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you so much.
Coming up, we want to hear from you. Do you have a blue-collar job you love? One you hate? Are your children thinking about entering a blue-collar field? Give us a call at 614-292 8513 or email allsides@wosu.org. We'll take your calls when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Here at Shortwave Space Camp, we escape our everyday lives to explore the mysteries and quirks of the universe. We find weird, fun, interesting stories that explain how the cosmos is partying all around us. From stars to dwarf planets to black holes and beyond, we've got you. Listen now to the Shortwave podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. We're talking about the shift being referred to as the blue-collar job boom today. It's about Gen Zers rediscovering blue-collar jobs and gravitating away from traditional four-year colleges. Industry watchers and sociologists have been observing this trend, and we're joined now by Ken Rusk, the author of the 2020 book, Blue Collar Cash: Love Your Work, Secure Your Future, and Find Happiness for Life. Welcome to All Sides, Ken.
Thanks, Anna. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
You run Rusk Industries, which specializes in different kinds of construction, but you began your career digging ditches. Did you ever consider college when you were out there digging in the dirt?
You know, I had an opportunity that was given to me right when I was making that decision. So when I was 18, after several years of digging ditches, I was approached because I knew the front half of the business and the back half. And so they started opening franchises around the country and they said, hey, I know you're thinking about what your future is. You're not sure whether you want to go to college or not, but we can use you to help us open these places. So I literally traveled the country opening businesses from scratch, which in my mind was kind of as good as college would have been for a business type of thing.
The conventional wisdom, though, for decades has been go to college, get good grades, earn your ticket to that good life. Why do you think a whole generation of parents pushed that narrative on their children?
You know, I think it was kind of a blind allegiance. I think it was just something where it was just assumed that if you got a college degree, you were going to live a better life. It's never really been true, but I think colleges were really, really good at almost parent shaming people. If you don't send your kid through our process, he or she is going to be a nobody. They'll be flipping burgers the rest of their life. And literally, that's never been true. So I don't necessarily blame them. I think they kind of blindly followed the herd, if you will. But again, one of the best kept secrets in the world out there is a lot of potential, a lot of demand, and a lot of money in blue collar trades.
I also think the fact that the government has a seemingly endless supply of money ready to lend teenagers doesn't help, because you can, I mean, it's sold as you can afford college.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, if I agree with what you're saying to a point. The thing I would push back on is they were lending money on degrees that they knew weren't going to be used any time in the future. I mean, literally only one third of all college graduates ever use their degree ever. So the fact that they were lending money with absolutely no responsibility on the backside of it, meaning, you know, I'm going to be a lawyer, so I'm going to get money for a law school. And when I get out, I'm going to be a lawyer. There's a direct connection, a direct path to the result. But if you just send kids to school to learn these liberal arts degrees or European language translation, I mean, they know they were lending money on products they couldn't actually use. And I think that's where the rub lies there.
I want to take a call from Brittany in Columbus, who is actually an Ohio State linguistics graduate. Welcome to All Sides, Brittany.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
So I understand you've changed careers.
Yes. So... Well, I've had a lot of jobs in my life. I've, you know, worked at restaurants. I worked at movie theaters. I worked as a substitute teacher. I was teaching kids English in Japan for a year, and I worked at a hotel. I worked at a grading test grading center, and finally, I landed doing tree work here in Columbus.
So, how did you go from linguistics graduate to a tree worker in Upper Arlington?
So, when I got back, from Japan, I was trying to find, I had graduated linguistics. Before I left for Japan, I was looking for a job related to linguistics. I soon learned that with just a bachelor's degree in linguistics, it's really hard to get into the field. A lot of jobs want you to do further education, like a master's or a PhD or something. And I didn't do that. And I'd been out of college for like a year, and I was like, I don't want to go back and spend money to do graduate school on something that I was, starting to be less and less passionate about every day. So when I got back, I was working, I had been working as a sub. It was the summertime, so there was no sub work. I was working at a hotel in the laundry area, and was looking for something better than that because, it was chill, but it didn't pay a lot. So I found this job working at the Park Service in Upper Arlington, and I took it. And I ended up meeting, they have a forestry division there in Upper Arlington, and I met, shout out to Scott Conover. He's the one who got me into tree work. I call him my tree father. He is like the most influential person to me. He really guided me in terms of doing tree work and climbing. And he introduced me to the world of tree work, really, and encouraged me more than anyone else has.
That's great. I think that's true, Ken, for a lot of college graduates, right? They try their degree and they don't completely love it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I actually switched my major multiple times. I started like graphic.
I think that's one of those things. And it's such a gamble because, 40 years ago, you might be out $15,000 for a college degree you're not going to use. Today, you can be out $150,000 for a degree you won't use.
It's interesting that you say that, and congratulations to her. I almost wish I had a nickel for every time I've heard that story that she just told, and I'm glad she found something she's happy with. But I can tell you this, I've been to parties where I've told parents, I said, here's the thing. Let's assume that you borrow $40,000-$50,000 a year to go to a really amazing school. 4 years later, that's $200,000 on the negative side of your asset base. Now you've got someone who, like her, can get right out of college. Construction jobs are now starting to pay $60,000, $70,000 a year. That's $300,000 on the plus side of your asset base by the time you're, 23? That's literally a $400,000 swing from negative to positive. And all I'm saying is you at least have to think about that before you automatically make this decision to just follow the crowd and go get that expensive degree.
Do you think we still need a larger cultural shift in the way we think about blue-collar work? Because, I always think about it when presidents talk about shovel-ready projects or construction-ready jobs. I wonder if they realize that what they really need to be talking about is why we need people to take those jobs. Does that make sense?
Well, absolutely it does. By the time you put your feet on the floor in the morning to get out of bed and head to your office or your school or your church or wherever you're going, you're crossing 10,000 at least blue collar jobs that are still viable today. And because of the fact that we shifted everyone towards college, now we're creating a supply and demand problem like we've never seen. And all I can tell you is if you're a contrarian thinker, and you say, well, if everybody's going this way, I should probably go that way. You're going to find supply and demand working in your favor because obviously where supply is low and demand is high, that's where the money goes. And that's what we're seeing here today.
I want to take another call from Chad in Columbus, who has a tech theater degree. What do you do now, Chad?
Good morning. Happy Wednesday. I do home remodeling now. That's the only thing I could find.
No, I was just going to ask, how did you land in that after graduation?
After graduation, I traveled a bit. I traveled a bit doing theater here and there. And there's plentiful options to do roadie jobs and being on tour. But to have a family, that really doesn't bode well. and to be there and present for a family. So you really, so I moved to Ohio from New York, and that transition was not easy to find a job that was suitable and making the same compensation. And through multiple jobs and failures, I finally found one that I like doing. But if I would give any advice to anybody doing anything, I had the biggest trait and biggest ability that I'm grateful to have, thanks to theater, is to be able to communicate with others and to work well with others. And that's something that the pro and the con side of college is, you're A, allowed to fail in a safe environment, and then you get to work with others, and then you figure out how to work well with others and how to work not so well with others. And all that's the beauty of college, other than being in debt for a large sum, where if I would have just picked up tools and red tape measures without going to college, I'd probably be a lot further like my coworkers. But not everyone has that luxury. So
yeah.
As I say this, I'm changing out windows to an abandoned house.
Well, thanks. Yeah, thank you for the call, Chad. You know, Ken, it's funny to me because I'm an older millennial. So I, you know, graduated into the Great Recession. And I feel like I was the first real generation to feel like that American dream story of go to college, get a good job. Like, I think I was the first cohort to really feel burned by that.
Well, and again, you're not alone, you know, but don't, you know, we can't beat ourselves up too bad, because you had a perfect storm working against you. I mean, first off, you know, you take all the shop classes out of high school, where kids could accidentally learn how cool it was to build a table or to change a transmission on a Mustang or to start a cooking class or be a chef, be a baker, you know, do, skincare, all those kinds of things. That was removed from you. So you didn't have the opportunity to see a lot of those great trades. Number two, you know, with the invention of these cell phones, I mean, you know, kids weren't out playing in the yard, building things, breaking things, fixing things, you know, beautifying things, maintaining things. That just didn't happen anymore. We just kind of went inside and kind of hung out with our cell phones for many years. And then if you pair those two things with college, it was literally, you know, the colleges are really good at marketing. I mean, they really are. So, and they're for-profit corporations. Let's not fool ourselves there. So the bottom line is, you had three powerful forces working against you. Plus your parents thought, well, that's just the automatic thing to do. But I'm glad that is starting to change. People are starting to see that maybe we did get burned by that story. And hopefully we won't be waiting 2 years for an electrical outlet and paying $1,500 for it in the future anytime soon.
You know, one of the things I was thinking about in preparing for this, and I want to get your take on it, is that it's not just traditionally blue-collar jobs that are facing labor shortages. Tailoring, for example, is an increasingly dying art. And master tailors charge more than $100 an hour for their work. It is a very highly paid skill.
I can tell you that my wife wanted to get a dress altered in Naples, Florida. It was an insane amount of money, and we had to wait a month. So, I mean, you know, a lot of these things, I think that's where people kind of get the misperception. They think, well, if it's a blue collar job, I need to be out, you know, swinging a hammer, or I need to be doing welding or something like that. There are so many highly skilled trades. And if you just look back in history to see where these people came from, they came from Germany, they came from Europe, they came from Italy, they came from Spain, they came from all these great countries, and they brought their skills with them. And that's where the tailors came from. That's where the furniture builders came from. That's where the clothing makers came from. And yeah, those are lost arts. But here's the thing. Again, if you're willing to do what somebody else isn't willing to do or aren't doing anymore, that's what you need to think about. And I get asked this advice all the time. How can I get started? It's real simple. I didn't have this opportunity when I was younger, but you go to any big box hardware store, Lowe's, Home Depot, you name it, Menards, you whatever it is. Go to the contractor desk, ask them what's missing in this town. What people are retiring soon? What's way behind in supply? What needs are out there that aren't being served? They will tell you that. All you have to do is plug one of those holes, jump into one of those trades, and you're going to have a great living.
We talked earlier about the role social media is playing in our perception of blue-collar jobs, but I want to go back a little further in time and ask you how you think the show Dirty Jobs impacted the way Americans think about blue-collar work.
Well, the problem with what that show did, and again, I love Mike Rowe. I think he's fantastic. I've met him a few times, and he's doing great things to help bring back this great country to some of these great jobs. I think one of the things that he did is he focused on some of the most terrible jobs in the United States. And therefore, you know, if you're cleaning out oil tanks, or if you're, you know, working at a hog farm, or if you're doing something like that, those are tough jobs, just like my job. I mean, we have 200 people here that do ditch digging every single day. But we've created a way where they can see what they want their life to look like, and they can find a way to get what they want for themselves. And I think that's the biggest thing. No matter what the job is, okay, Anna, you have to know why you're doing it. You have to know what the end game is. What's that perfect nirvana? I talk about it in Blue Collar Cash all in throughout the book. If you know what it is you want your life to look like, you can do almost any job to get there. And after all, living well is truly the ultimate goal.
I want to take a call from Sean in Columbus. Welcome to All Sides, Sean.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, sir?
I'm fine. Hey, I was just calling because I think your guest is right in that some of the blue-collar options have been denigrated in the past, and I really like what he's saying about, you know, filling a gap and that being a viable approach. I think that, you know, in the past that we have denigrated blue-collar jobs, but I think it's also important to not necessarily denigrate the value of a college education by, you know, in favor of blue-collar. Both of those approaches have their values depending on how you do it and what your goals are. I just put two kids through college, and a traditional college education does not need to result in a $250,000 loan if you're careful about how you do it. And you can come out of a college education with a job that you love and pays for that investment. So I guess my point is that both of those approaches have value, and it just depends on what you want to do and how you want to get it done. That's it.
Thanks, Sean. I do think that's true. I think it's about saying, you know, here are all of your options and helping your kids find the right option for them.
Yeah, I agree with him 100%. I mean, if you're going to operate on my shoulder so I can get back out on the golf course, I want you to know everything there is to know about a knife before you come at me with it. There is no doubt. What I'm saying is targeted college degrees, I believe, are of serious value. You know why you're going, you know what you're there for, you know the degree that you want, and there's probably a job that you want in that area waiting for you when you come out. The ones I'm talking about are the ones where kids go to school, and 40% of kids today go to college without knowing why they're going. That's a wholly inefficient statistic.
And the four-year graduation rates aren't great. Even some of the six-year graduation rates aren't great, and then all you've done is go 6 years and have no degree for show for it.
Not only that, but if you think about long-term investing, and again, I want to say again, I agree with the previous caller that there is value as long as it's targeted. The one problem with taking 6 years out of your life, if you think about investing your money, you literally have 6-7 year sessions to try to invest your money and to capitalize on all those doubles. You know, they say your money doubles every 7 years, right? So you have 42 years plus 21 to about 63 years of age to take advantage of all that money doubling each 7 years. If you take too much time off and you float around and get too lost during that first 6 year period or 7 year period, you've literally lost the ability to have that final double. And that final double can mean the difference between $500,000 and $1 million when you retire. So all I'm saying is be very careful, be very targeted, be very efficient, and take advantage of the time that you have.
Finally, I want to ask you about some of the broader implications of labor shortages here in the United States. We've been talking a lot about the micro impact, and I do think choosing the wrong career or feeling like you've made a huge investment mistake is really tragic for anyone to, and I hope no one experiences that. But the larger, broader issue, you know, when we talk about reshoring, say, semiconductor chip manufacturing, it's been sold as a national security issue. Do you see broader security implications in these labor shortages?
You know, when I learned, I think I learned during the last administration, when I learned that all of our antibiotics, or most of them, were made overseas in China, when I learned that most of our chips were made over there, and I see hundreds of F-150 pickup trucks sitting in open fields, unusable because they don't have a chip in them, because we don't have enough chips, I say to myself, what are we doing here? I mean, I'm not talking about protectionism where we shut off the rest of the world, but we can't possibly have all of our steel, all of our antibiotics, all of our chip making.
Our cell phones, our clothes.
Yeah, we can't possibly have that made all around the world. I mean, if somebody ever really wanted to give us a hard time, they would have, we'd have a world of hurt to go through there. So I applaud a lot of the onshoring. I applaud, and these jobs, by the way, Columbus, Ohio, right? Just north of you, they're building a huge chip manufacturing plant. And did I hear those jobs start at like $100,000 to $130,000?
That's the promise.
Yeah, so... why not? Why not celebrate the people that we have? Why not put the people that we have to work? Why not show them the fact that they can create an amazing life for themselves without having to spend the first 4 years of their adulthood, you know, learning something that they may or may not use? That's the argument for me.
And that was Ken Rusk, author of the 2020 book, Blue Collar Cash, Love Your Work, Secure Your Future, and Find Happiness for Life. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it, Anna.
Coming up, how Ohio is, or maybe isn't, meeting the demand for career training that doesn't include college. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News. Here at Shortwave Space Camp, we escape our everyday lives to explore the mysteries and quirks of the universe. We find weird, fun, interesting stories that explain how the cosmos is partying all around us. From stars to dwarf planets to black holes and beyond, we've got you. Listen now to the Shortwave podcast from NPR. You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. Ohio has more than 27,000 positions posted to its job website right now that pay more than $50,000 per year and don't require a college degree. A number that's only going to increase as Intel and other tech manufacturers continue to reshore jobs in the semiconductor industry. We're talking this hour about those jobs and the blue-collar job boom. And we're turning our attention to Ohio in our final segment. Dee Smith is the executive director of Ohio's Association of Career and Technical Education. Dee, welcome to All Sides.
Thank you, Anne. I'm happy to be here.
Governor DeWine's administration has been pushing to increase funding for tech centers and career tech education in the last several budgets. So I have to ask, how are we doing? Because every time I hear about it, I hear we have so many kids waiting. We have so many spots that we can't fill.
Correct. So I've been around long enough that career tech was not the cool kid in the room, right? But clearly we have turned that corner and more parents and students are making better informed choices about life planning and career pathways. So with the investment of $300 million by the Dwight Houston administration and the legislature, we are achieving those goals of expanding career technical education. Unfortunately, some of those facilities still have to be built. But one of the innovative ways that we've tried to get at the immediate need is to develop a program called Ohio Technical Center Plus. And through that program, we have the flexibility to start serving some of our secondary students in our adult workforce centers. And so we're getting at that immediate need. But once the facilities and the equipment grants go out and facilities are built, we are going to be adding 39,000 folks to the workforce over the next couple of years. So about 10 years out, we'll have added almost 40,000 people or more to our workforce through this investment of $300 million.
It feels like a real reversal because I can remember things like shop and home ec and all those classes being cut when I was in high school. And not to date myself, but, you know, it's been a minute. So now they're all coming back.
Correct. Correct. You know, I think, and I've talked about this quite a bit with several folks, that we had an opportunity. Most people do not call COVID an opportunity, but we had an opportunity during COVID to highlight the essential jobs of our economy and of our workforce, where who continued to work, who was sent home, and families and learners of all ages took note and realized that this is not grandpa in your dad's blue collar economy, that it is a very different world now, and that there is good value in today's blue collar jobs.
What are the needs in Ohio going to look like going forward? You know, at the beginning of this hour, we were talking about how there is an anticipated electrician shortage, how we're going to need 500,000 plumbers in the United States in the coming decades. Are we seeing similar patterns here in Ohio of like the kinds of careers we're just going to need more of?
Absolutely. If you look at the data that's on the Jobs Ohio website or on Ohio Means Jobs, it is clear that we need more of everything. We need more electricians. We need more advanced manufacturing. We need more construction. We need more iron workers. And that's just the traditional jobs that you and I are thinking about right now that we traditionally think about as blue collar. We also need more cybersecurity experts. We need additional AI experts. There are industries that we don't even contemplate yet that are going to need additional workforce, and the career technical centers, all of our compact and comprehensive centers, and our adult Ohio technical centers are here and ready for the work. And in fact, where I'm sitting today doing this interview at our annual conference, we've been talking for the last 3 days about how do we continue to supply and get the workforce out there that we need to continue to supply for Ohio.
It's funny to think of the phrases like high tech and trade, or high tech and blue collar, in the same sentences, but particularly with things like Intel coming. It's pretty true. Semiconductor manufacturing is very high tech, and a lot of those jobs will be blue collar.
Yes, absolutely. But not blue collar in the way that we, you and I, think about blue collar. And that when I say it's not your dad or your grandfather's blue collar, when we think about manufacturing, we think about steel mill. Apparently, I'm not going to be able to say that. Steel mills from the 1950s, 60s, and the early 70s, where it was dark and dirty and nobody wanted to do that job. And quite frankly, we were all encouraged not to go do those jobs.
Yeah, you think coal miner.
Correct. Today's manufacturing is clean. Much of it has to be done in clean rooms. It's air conditioned. The exhibitors that I have here with me, my exhibitor hallway is like a sci-fi show, quite frankly, because there are robots and AI dogs. It's insane to think about what today's world looks like versus what it did previously. And I've been involved in some of those conversations with Intel folks and around the advanced manufacturing arena. And the reality is we need to have our best and brightest in those positions. But and when we think about blue collar, we've not necessarily thought over the years about these are high wage positions and they are career long positions, right? You're going to go work for Intel and you're going to have a 20, 30, 40 year career there. And when you talk to people who have worked for Intel in other states, that's an amazing career. They take fantastic care of you, but it's not just Intel. It's the Honda EV. When you look at the map of all of the economic development that's going on across the state, we have amazing opportunities that it's not an and or, right? Go through the career technical education at your high school, go to an Ohio Technical Center after you graduate, but then matriculate to the 2-year, start the job, let the employer pay for that 2-year, right? And then, okay, I've got 2 years under my belt. Well, what's 2 more years? Let me get that bachelor. And then you just continue to elevate yourself through your career. And it is the perfect pathway to continue to advance yourself.
And the risk there, the cost is a lot lower, because if it turns out 3-4 years down the line that you don't like the job, that it isn't for you, I just think about how hard it has to be to have sunk $100,000 on an education for a career that you don't love.
That is why career exploration and awareness is so important and vital at the younger ages. We have been talking for months and months, longer than months and months, quite frankly. We've talked about career awareness spending in several budgets now. It's a priority. We heard Governor DeWine in his State of the State address tell us that he wants career planning for every student, but that really has to start much younger. And I like to refer to it as life planning instead of career planning, right? How do we get a student to think about, this is what my life, what I want my life to look like when I'm 30. I want 2 kids and a car and a house with a wife or a husband on a cul-de-sac. In thinking about, well, I want to be in the medical field. And instead of thinking I have to be a doctor, there are all of these other branches of that healthcare tree that I can go into instead of that. So planning for life, and in the middle school and early high school levels, it's as important to learn about what you don't like to do as it is to learn what you like to do. So the quicker we can figure out what we don't like to do, then we're not spending $100,000 on a degree that doesn't suit us. And that, you know, that saying of do something you love and you'll never work a day in your life. Find that and do it instead of having something that I hate this and you don't really have gratitude for going to it every day. So the earlier we can learn that, the better.
I'm a big proponent of internships. I think it's the greatest way to learn whether you like a career or not.
Yes, we do a lot with work-based learning. So I think work-based learning is a little bit of a buzzword in today's world, right? We started talking about it, honestly, around the time COVID hit. Where career technical centers, we are the original work-based learning. We called them co-ops. We've called them school to work. It's had a variety of terms over the years, but work-based learning, where a student can go out and be in the field and decide, like, okay, this is what it is actually like. I have a person in my office who says very frequently, if I had really understood what that degree was about, I probably would not have finished it, right? If I had done an internship when I was a junior in high school, I don't think I would have made the same choice. Where my son did a work-based learning experience and loved it, and he is pursuing it. He's graduated. He's got a great gig going on. Quite frankly, he's making money that it took me 15 years to make, right?
Good for him.
It's a fantastic thing, and it's a great way for students to learn. We've called them a variety of different things over the years: soft skills, durable skills, professional skills, whatever. When you have to show up at a job site and show up on time, and learning that experience and that reality, it's an invaluable life experience. So work-based learning, internships, externships, they are high value for students in Ohio.
Since you're a mom, I want to ask, how did you have the conversation with your children about whether college or career tech was the right choice? Because I think that is something so many of us struggle with. We all want what's best for our kids. We all want our children to have better lives, more successful, more happy lives than us. And it can feel risky to not push them towards college.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I definitely grew up in the generation where it was, you go to college to be successful. But I do have college coursework. However, I'm a career tech kid. I am a career tech completer, and it's how I built my career. I did not push my children to pursue career technical education, but they always knew it was an option. And they knew, because I talk about it a lot, that career technical education literally changed my life. And that's not being, over the top about it in any way, shape, or form. The teachers that poured into me and the knowledge that I learned really did change my world. So my kids always knew it was an option, but it wasn't something they had to pursue. If they wanted to go to college, we were going to support that in any way that we could. And in fact, my daughter took a career technical education course that is honestly a college pathway, right? when you think about health sciences, most of those students are thinking about pre-med, nursing, along those lines, or LPN. There's a variety of ways that they can go. Ultimately, she decided not to pursue college. Well, we could talk about that for a variety of reasons. Cough, cough, COVID. She's decided that she, you know, she's doing a great thing. She's still working in the healthcare field in a different role. My son, same, he was very adamant that he wasn't going to go to college, that he wanted to go into welding. He likes to work outside. He likes to work with his hands, and that's the way his mind works. One of the things that I think we're starting to successfully get over is the, it's good for everyone else's child, but not mine, because this is not the vocational education of the 1970s. Career Tech is a completely modernized system, and it's good, honest work. What most folks don't know is at least 3 college credits are attached to every career technical education pathway.
That was Dee Smith. Thank you for your time this morning.